Good evening.
Hey, it's Michael.
Michael, what's happening? How are you?
I am awesome. Are you Ben or Benjamin?
I go by either, but if we're doing like work stuff, Benjamin is cool. If you want to call me Ben, that's fine with me too.
I go by Michael, so I just presume everybody goes by their full name.
Yeah, why not, right? I mean, you got a full name. You might as well use the full thing, right?
Right. Why only use half of it? Your parents gave you a big one. So is your middle name Max or Maxwell?
It's Max.
That is even better.
I'm named after my great-grandfather.
I had an Uncle Max.
Oh, nice, man.
He was a great uncle. It was probably my mother's uncle. My father's uncle? Probably my father's uncle. Anyway.
sorry about that. I haven't used Skype in a while, and I guess they wanted me to update, and Microsoft wanted all my personal information so they could track me. You know, all that good stuff.
You did remember the keyword, right? Rumpelstiltskin?
Right.
Anyway.
So are you in Hong Kong?
I'm in Bangkok, man.
In Bangkok, man.
Even better.
What a great city that is.
Even better. Where are you from originally?
I'm from Los Angeles, and I live in Los Angeles. I don't know, what is that? You mean like where's my family from?
No. I was just curious. You were born in California, raised in Los Angeles. You went to school in where Santa Barbara. I was born in Santa Barbara.
Oh man, yeah, they're battering down the hatches right now with that rain.
I have no idea. You have to understand this. You probably don't know this. I haven't lived in the United States in almost 30 years.
Wow, it's crazy.
Yeah, so I left when I was 24, so it's really 28 years. And I've been back, obviously, but I haven't been back in the States since 2010.
Wow. That's awesome, but that's also surprising. I'm sure you probably read about the mudslides in Santa Barbara last month.
Yeah, I mean, I peripherally keep track of the weather in the U.S. only because, you know, my brother lives in Connecticut, my sister lives in Florida, my other sister lives in Ohio, so I do pay attention, but frankly, not that much.
So anyways, there was some mudslides after the big fire, and it killed two dozen people, they're having some more rain now, so we're just hoping that doesn't happen again.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, California has that though, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got weather, it's got earthquakes, it's got stuff.
Totally. Totally. You guys in Bangkok, you just have rain.
Well, so the stuff that I used to hear, I've lived here for 6 years, right? So when I first moved here, you know, people used to say Bangkok has four seasons, hot, hotter, wet, wetter, right?
Right.
And it's kind of more just wet and hot. But, you know, like sure. I say, if you're going to complain about the heat or complain about the rain, you just shouldn't be living here. Like, stop complaining and just move.
Absolutely, yeah. I was there – I guess it's been a few years since I was there, but it was definitely wet and hot. And I was okay with that.
So you've known Jerome for a while, right? Like you did an internship a long time ago with Next Step, no? Because you're –
Yeah, you know, it has been a long time. It has been a long time. I was much younger. I want to say it was
– 2010? 2000 – no, earlier, 9.
2011.
11, okay.
So it's almost been seven. So it's been 6.5 years.
Wow, that's a long time ago. Yeah. Where did you do it?
Hong Kong.
And what was it like? I mean, 6 years is a long time ago, right? I moved here, like I said, at the end of 2011, beginning of 2012. What was it like? Like, how did you find out about it? What was going? You were still at Santa Barbara. Or were you at USC at the time?
Yeah, so I was at and by the way, are we just warming up or
no, dude, we're live. We go live right away.
Okay, right on.
You should be used to this.
So I was at USC getting my master's in journalism.
Wow, at Annenberg,
and
yeah.
They had a really cool program where they let you study abroad, which was really appealing to me because I love to travel, but I never had really done the study abroad thing in undergrad. Mostly because I I knew myself. I was like, if I go to Europe, if I go to Asia, when in my younger days, right. I probably wasn't going to do much studying. It was going to be a waste.
Yeah.
But I was at a different point in my life where I was like, I want to, you know, I want to go and work. And it was grad school, and I was ready to go. So, you know, there were a couple professors that were going to take a group to Hong Kong. I had never been to Asia, and I was like, yes, I'm in. That sounds wow. great. And next step was the group that kind of served as the liaison between us and, you know, finding our job for the summer, basically.
Right.
And then also right. being our stewards, our people watching over us that summer. So that's how I got, that's how I met them. I met Jerome. And, you know, basically, I worked that summer at CNN International on
wow.
the team. So I'm a journalist and I work right now for one of the affiliate NPR stations here in Los Angeles, KCRW. At the time, I was doing a lot more web stuff, and I worked with CNN. It was really great, really great summer.
And so, was that your first time working at like a bona fide journalistic outfit, if that's a fair thing to call it? I mean, CNN's yeah. real, yeah.
I guess in a way it was. I, you know, in Santa Barbara, and you know, if you're from there, I don't know if you recall, but I wrote for the Santa Barbara Independent, which is an alt weekly, which oh. still exists okay. in Santa Barbara. But yeah, I guess, yeah, this was like, you know, this was definitely my first big job that, you know, you call up your bubby and you're like, bubby, I got this great, you know what I mean? I got this great job. CNN, she's like, Benjamin, great job. You did so good.
Wait a second. Do you really call your grandmother your bubby?
Absolutely. Well, I've got a bubby and a grandmother, so you can tell which side is a little bit more Jewish.
I was going to say.
So Bubby was proud, and yeah, it was but you know, all joking aside, it really was it was great. I mean, it was, you know, it was a time when people were saying, what the heck are you doing? You're going to be a journalist? You know, I mean, this is, you know, 2011,
right.
just after the recession, no one's hiring. And I'm like, yeah, I love this kind of stuff. I'm going to give it a shot. And so to get a gig like that was awesome.
Where did you live? Like, what was it like in Hong Kong for you? You were still, what, 20? Because you're 30 now?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember how old you are.
No, that's okay. I'm 30, turning 31 this year. Yeah, I must have been 24.
And your first time in Asia, like, were you blown away by the Hong Kong experience? What was that like?
Oh, totally. And I lived, I mean, I don't know how familiar you are with Hong Kong,
Very.
But I lived in, okay, so I lived in Mong Kok.
Oh, wow.
Which was
even better.
I tell this story to people that ask me a similar question all the time. I would get off of the MTR, you know, coming back from the island, because CNN was on the island by Corrie Bay, one of those big high rises.
Yep.
And I'd get off and I'd be walking to my place. And I'd be like, wow, I am so stressed out. What the heck is going on? And I'd have to remind myself, oh, yeah, I'm in the most densely populated part of the world right now. That's why I'm stressed out. And I lived literally in like one room with a bathroom. It was a shoebox with a Chinese student. And we lived in there together. And I'd come home and, you know, I'd get home late, but he would be out even later working crazy hours, and he'd be, you know, he'd come home, he'd play his video games and say his, you know, it was a really funny experience, but he's, you know, it was great. I mean, it was like living in the dorms again, only even more confined of a space.
do you think about it today? Like, you know, there's a big difference actually. When you're 24, you don't realize it, but there's a big difference between 24 and 31. You
sure,
know what I mean?
Sure.
And like your life experience. And if you grew up in LA and went to school in Santa Barbara, it's just not that far away. Obviously, Santa Barbara and LA, very different, but they're nothing like Hong Kong.
No.
Did you feel like you had to? And to be fair, I don't know where you're from in Los Angeles, but there's nothing like Mong Kok in LA.
No, you're absolutely right.
And there is. And even if there is, you definitely were not living there.
That's also true. I grew up in Sherman Oaks, if that gives you any perspective.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, let's not go there. But like, what was, do you remember that feeling? Like, you remember getting off the plane at the airport and just like going through? I mean, Hong Kong is in a way lucky because there's English spoken there, right? But Mong Kok is not super international.
There's not much, there wasn't much English when I would go get dinner in Mong Kok.
Yeah, no,
sure.
Not at all. And that's good, right? I mean, isn't that part of the plan? Like, part of the deal is to figure that out when you're there?
Absolutely. I think your question is like, was I Was it a culture shock? How was I feeling?
Yeah, were you
And
intimidated at all by that? Like, what was that like?
so, I mean, I don't mean to sound like cavalier or full of myself. This is just the truth. I really have loved travel and always loved travel. And this was, I had done Europe, I had done other parts of the world, I had done South America. My father's family's from Argentina and he's from there.
That's so
And so I've
cool.
been there. It's different than Asia. Asia is a whole completely different beast. And I didn't really, I guess the truth is I didn't really know how much I would like it.
Right.
I just wanted to check it out. But I really got into it. And yeah, of course it was a shock. I mean, seeing all sorts of things at the supermarkets. I love to go shop at the market and buy stuff and go home and cook it wherever I am.
So
Go to the
awesome.
market, like, yeah, go to the market. And it's like, what the heck is this stuff? Turtle jelly? Why do I? What is turtle jelly?
Isn't strawberry jelly just good enough, kind of thing?
Right, exactly. And going out to eat in Mongkok, and the restaurant's like under a big bridge, and I gotta point at the guy, and he's chopping up the duck right in front of my face. I'm like, yeah, I want that. I mean, it was amazing, really. But yes, I mean, I couldn't have imagined, 24-year-old Ben, like if I were talking to him today, like, hey, this is what it'd be like. It would be hard to really communicate that, I think, because you have to really be there to get it, and that's really the whole point of travel, right? I mean, you can't really understand a place or a group of people till you meet them in person
You
in
just
their place.
nailed it, right? I mean, you really did just nail it. So for me, I went to Japan when I was 24, and I didn't leave until I was 46, right? So I stayed a lot longer than you did, but I
Yes.
was the same way. It kind of in reverse, right? Because I never had the experience to travel beforehand, but that was just an economic issue. It wasn't a desire
Sure.
issue, right? So for me, as soon as I got to Japan, like I didn't complain, I didn't care. I learned how to use chopsticks, like I learned how to speak the language. I did all that stuff, and I, like you, I would go into the supermarket, into markets as well, and just think, "What is that? Don't care. I'm gonna try that thing, whatever it was." Right? And it was the
That's
same
awesome.
with, yeah, it was super. So I get that perspective, right? But it also made me, I have this weird experience today where, like, I can't tell where I'm from in a way. I feel like a third culture adult. But I think people that travel a lot feel that way too.
But you've also lived abroad, so you probably have that expat mentality and identity that permeates you. That's maybe a little bit different than me.
Yeah,
Which is, I
maybe, but it's weird, right? Because a lot of expats, if you want to make that a category, right, what they'll do is they'll live in an expat area. So they'll take
Right.
all the benefits of being an expatriate, but none of the benefits of being a local, in the sense that, they'll live in an enclave or they'll live in an enclosed community, which includes other expats. And most of those other expats are transient, only there for 2 to 3 years, and that's all they get. But what I did was I took all the stuff that I got and I moved far out. So I lived in a place where there were no other foreigners, no other expats. And I did kind of what you did. I lived in Mongkok, basically, but just in Tokyo. And
Wow.
that's why I get that experience. And that's why I understand, like, the power of it. I couldn't speak to anybody. I couldn't understand anything that was going on. I didn't even know how to say, "I'll be right back." Do you know what I mean? I made it up. I, like, pointed over there and then pointed back here. It was just amazing. I didn't even know how to tell them how to cut my hair, kind of thing. But that's the kind of benefit you get from living in a place where no one is similar to you, right?
Absolutely. And I thought when you said I'll be right back, that was a great place for you to put like a advertisement for the podcast. I thought that's where you're going.
You don't know what I'm doing later, right?
Wasn't sure, that was funny. So, yeah, no, I'm with you. I think, would you say that people are kind of, especially those that have lived abroad as long as you have, that term expat is kind of like a almost not an insulting term, but it just doesn't quite capture what it is that you are and what you're doing. I mean,
Well,
because it almost carries a negative connotation.
it's pejorative in
Okay.
a way, right? Because the understanding is that most expats, first of all, a lot of people, will think about an expat living in London or an expat living in France, right? And one of the big differences there is you're not a visual minority. When you walk down the street in Mongkok, like, they knew you weren't from there.
Totally.
Just completely, right? So
Totally.
yeah, being, "Oh, you were an expat in Tokyo," feels to me pejorative because I spent my entire adult life there. And there's a part of me that's very Japanese in a way, right? Because that's all I know as an adult.
I guess in Asia, what makes it a little bit different is that, you know, the most of the societies are so homogenous
Yeah,
that
exactly.
it's hard to really. I mean, I'd be really. I mean, not that I'm interviewing you, but I'd be really interested to ask you. I mean, a part of you can never really be Thai or Japanese, just because, not because. I mean, it's simply by nature of how those countries handle their immigration, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I mean.
I could have become a permanent resident in Japan, and in Thailand, the US government obviously has a very strong relationship for military reasons and embassy reasons here, right, that go back decades, almost more than half a century. But you're right, it's more important than you cannot become a citizen of that country. It's you simply cannot become Japanese, or you cannot be Thai, because you're not born and raised that way, right? Like, in the same way, you could move to Zimbabwe and you're never going to be a Zimbabwean, because you just don't. You can eat the food, you can speak the language, you can say you understand the culture, but in a moment of like crisis, you're going to default to what your, and I'm only going to use this word because you did, because like your bubby and your zaidi told you to do this thing. Do you know what I mean?
You
Because
can use
that's who
Bobby and say
you,
as much as you want.
but I'm just saying, because that's who you are though, right? At the
Right,
core.
sure.
And it doesn't come out until there's a stress, right? But in normal day-to-day life, like I find myself doing things like making expressions and having mannerisms that are very Japanese, because that's all I saw for 20 something years. That's not on purpose. That's not me trying to fit in or anything like that. And I think that whether it's a 6-week program in Hong Kong or a 22-year program in Japan, some of that stuff just gets left with you, and it's very subtle, actually.
No, I think that's well put. I always wondered that about that because I mean that I think that's the thing, especially with me. I kind of can look like a lot of different nationalities. I can look South American. I can look like I'm Eastern European. And so when I go places, you know, you can kind of just blend in, especially in Europe. But obviously, there's very little blending that you can do in Asia.
Yeah, cannot do it, right? It's not, so you're right. They look at you and they know you're not Japanese and they know you're not Thai. And you don't know what I look like except for the pictures that you see on the internet, right? But I get the same thing you get. No one's ever asked me if I was from Argentina, but I've literally had everything are you from Mumbai
Right.
to are you Emirati?
Yeah,
Right?
well, I'm looking at your icon on Skype here. I can see an Emirati
Yeah,
for sure.
well, that picture is me. That's in the desert in Dubai. So fair
Exactly.
enough.
Maybe a desert pointed me in that direction. By the way, there are
So
sand dunes in the background.
yeah, I mean, so fair enough, right? But the key thing is this adaptability, right? I mean, you learn this when you tra whether you travel again for an extended period of time or just for a short period of time, you just learn how to adapt. In a way, you become a little bit of a chameleon, for lack of a better term. And I think it comes in super handy.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, if there's one thing I could say to you, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what the main point is of this particular conversation we're having, but I will say that I think you know, there's no better way to really, I think, understand other cultures or in really the world than by traveling and how many places you go to.
Agreed.
And whether or not you're someone like you who decides you're going to be living abroad for most of your adult life, I'm assuming that's going to continue for you. Or if you're like me and, you know, your work takes you abroad, but you still have, you know, have a base in the States, it's the best way to get really any perspective. I mean, I hear people, because I, you know, I'm a journalist, I work in that profession, I interview a lot of people, and their perspectives on things are just so myopic
So
and
myopic, right?
yeah, and just kind of so just
Narrow.
incorrect,
Well, it's just
but
narrow.
incomplete. But incomplete, exactly. And
Yeah.
so, and it just comes, you know, and then you could pick your topic, you could pick your issue of the day, and it just really comes from not knowing enough, not experiencing enough, and not meeting people, you
Right.
know?
So you're maybe a little bit further away from this experience that you had in Hong Kong, but I think if I'd asked you when you were 25, and just based on the traveling you'd done anyway, you know, what's one of the biggest things you learn from these internships? And it's really the fact that unless you interact with people you don't know, right, then you really have no idea what they're like. And it teaches you this, and particularly if you go to a place where it's not Europe, it's not, you know, the UK, where you stick out a little bit, now you understand what it's like not to be the same as everybody else every single moment, every day of your life.
Totally. No, that's spot on. I mean, just a really quick anecdote.
Tell me.
My roommate was Chinese. His name was Xu Zi Chen.
Yep.
What a great guy. I never had any inclination in my life to live with a Chinese guy. And we were sardines in this bedroom.
Was he part of the program as well or no?
He was. Next Step had set him up with he was in the PR department. And they set him up with he went to USC studying there for a couple of years. Oh. And they set him up with a internship with a PR firm. I don't know the PR firm super well, but like McKinsey or one of those types. And I got to tell you, I had this – I think a lot of Americans have this too. This like really weird opinion of China. Like China is this emerging country with with all these people, and they're a threat to the U.S. and they have all these – they're backward on human rights and blah, blah, blah. I mean, a lot of that is kind of true. But, you know, you don't get the other perspective about China. And what was cool is that Next Step and USC and my professors, they took us to China a couple times. We were in Yunnan. We went to Beijing. And they also, paired us with, I stayed with a Chinese student. Yeah. I had got this whole new opinion and appreciation for China and perspective I didn't have.
Yep.
You know, I mean, I asked them, like, you guys can't look up Tiananmen on the internet. Does that bother you? And he's like, well, I mean, yeah, it's kind of a problem, but like also I'm really proud to be Chinese. And like that perspective is so relatable because it's like, yeah, there's plenty of, excuse my language, plenty of crap about the U.S. that I really am not proud of that this country has done. But that doesn't mean that I'm not proud to be American.
Right. But let me give you my anecdote because I agree with you, right? So if you consider what you watch on television, right, the international news that you see about China is heavily skewed and you don't get to decide, right? But imagine if you saw the same stories in reverse about the United States. So if all you saw was the shooting in Parkland and the riots in LA and, you know, steel mills closing in Pittsburgh, all this stuff, if that's all you saw, your view of the United States would be really weird. And when I went to China the first time in 1990 and then went back in 1991, I was with a guy from Texas who had studied in China. You know, it's just a bunch of idiots, basically us. We're 25, 26 years old. And we're like, yeah, China, it's a repressive country and all this other stuff. He goes, wait a second, there are a billion people here. And the Chinese are trying to catch up after like 50 years of doing nothing. And they're trying to electrify the entire country. And sometimes you just need to like be a little bit utilitarian, and the government needs to be a little bit stronger just to get that shit done.
Hmm. Interesting.
It was just a really interesting perspective. And as we're, driving around China and training around China, you just look and going, it's pretty vast here. And maybe somebody needs to be, just one person needs to be in charge, as long as they're mildly benevolent, just to get electricity to everybody. Because then you go in reverse and think, you know, that road that goes back from JFK into Manhattan is a complete mess.
Right.
Why won't they fix it? It can't be that hard to fix. And I'm not making excuses either way. I'm just saying, like, if all you saw was that as a foreigner about America, you'd think it was pretty dystopian.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that gentleman in Texas, the Texas guy who you said that said you have to have an authoritative government to progress. But at the point you're making, I do agree with that. You are only getting a certain perspective on places. A lot of people don't have the ability to
travel
abroad, travel.
Yeah.
Like you said, you mentioned earlier that the reason you hadn't traveled much until you went to Japan was economic.
Yeah.
Well, that's a huge thing for a lot of Americans. Huge. I mean, I don't know what the stats are right now, but I think it's a good 50. Number of Americans, like millions, do not have passports.
50%.
Okay,
it's a delta around 50, so 48, 51, pick a number. But yeah, and you're right, it's hard, and you cannot convince that person that like somebody in China is really just trying to feed their family just like they are.
Absolutely. And it goes to other countries too. I mean, God, not to make this a little bit more political, but what about with Middle Eastern people in this country, and how there's so much animosity towards Islam and Middle Eastern people, and they're painted with such a broad brush. I mean, people have never met an Iraqi or a Saudi or an Egyptian,
right?
And they have all these opinions about them.
Right. They know nothing.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah, they know nothing. But again, let's just loop this back into this time in Hong Kong, right? Because that's the whole point.
Sure.
But the point is that for somebody who's not as well traveled, doing that type of internship exposes them to a whole bunch of experiences that they wouldn't have otherwise. And I think that's part of the real power of it.
Yes.
And that's sort of the thematic thing that I'm getting when I talk to people that have been through the program. You're probably the person who's been through it the furthest away from today.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, no, and it's great. That's why this conversation is so interesting to me, right? I feel like normally I do 30. I feel like I could do an hour of conversation with you about this. No, I mean, for a bunch of different reasons.
Yeah, well, we can do 30. It's all good.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I mean, we'll end soon. But the idea is that you kind of carry that with you, right, for the rest of your life, particularly if it's a new experience, right? So for you, it was additive. Right, it was complementary or supplementary to what you'd already experienced. But for some people, that's the first time they've ever been away.
That's true. And I wouldn't sell it short. I mean,
No.
I had never been to Asia, and I had no idea what to expect. And Hong Kong was where I lived. So, I mean, in that sense, I understood the overarching concept and the value of travel, but it wasn't because I had done it
right.
a good amount of times. But when you first go to Asia, and I'm sure you remember, it is a complete culture shock.
It's upside down and backwards,
completely.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you're in LA. Do you still go back to school? Like, do you mentor kids at school? Do you talk to kids at school? Do they look at you as like, he went through the journalism program and now he's a journalist type of thing? And do you talk to them about it at all?
Yeah. And yes, I do. And it's funny because I was never really that kind of student. I was never the student that you'd say like Ben would come back and really talk to the kids. But yeah, I have become that. I go back to USC. I talk about the the abroad programs, and also
you do, okay.
Being a journalist. Yeah, and I do that. Yeah.
And what's the response? Like, do you feel like sometimes you have to convince the kids that like, and we can call them kids now because they're in their 20 or 19 or whatever. But do you feel like you have to convince them that it's a great thing, or most of them just so open-minded now that it's not a big – you don't have to sell it so hard?
That's an interesting question. I'm always hesitant to paint everyone with –
For sure. Generalizations are hard, but
– Yeah. But I will say – so I have interns that work with me at the radio station, and they come from the various universities, so USC, UCLA. And I'm always pushing to them like, hey – cause, you know, a lot of them are eager. They want to get jobs – right after graduation, I'm like, look, you should go travel.
Yeah.
And I always find myself pushing Asia. Like, there's all these programs that will let you be a journalist for a year, an Asia fellowship or an internship. Go do it. Because I had such a positive experience. Any opportunity to go live in Asia is great. Although, I guess, you know, the fear for maybe some parents is you could end up like Michael and be there for 25 years, right?
But why is that bad? Here's the thing, though, right? The world is getting so small. Remember, when I lived in Japan, I went to school in Japan as well, right? So I did my exchange program there, and then I moved there after I graduated from college. I did Morgan Stanley for 2 years in New York, and then I did Morgan Stanley in Tokyo for 10.
Wow.
Well, for 8, yeah. But, you know, there was no Skype. There was no internet, you know, to be fair. So for today – and here's the other thing about Asia, right? So – we talk about this a lot, and you can go look at it when we get off the phone, but like, there are 3.5 billion people within 5 hours of me. You just think about that.
I haven't heard of it like that, but that's true.
Okay, and I'll send you something, because this is obviously not the last time you and I are going to talk. I think that's pretty obvious. But there are literally like more people inside this little circle than there are outside of it. So more than half the world's population lives really close to me, and they're developing. Which means that there are so many, whether it's journalism or tech or deep tech or pick anything, retail, e-commerce, anything, the opportunities are endless and most of it's greenfield. And that's unprecedented, really, in human history. China's China, and it's got a whole bunch of stuff going on there that are really interesting. And everything, every idea in China has 10,000 people working on it. But in the rest of Asia, you know, anything's possible. And the ability to come home, remember, air travel is really way cheaper today, even than it was 10 years ago, which means that living, that's why digital nomads make sense and all these other things that we haven't had a chance to talk about. But that's why that travel and that interning is so important, because you can literally leave an amazing place like Los Angeles and end up in a spectacular place like Shanghai or Bangkok and just say, I'm just going to build a life here because I can be back in LA in a day if I need to.
Absolutely. No, it's a good point. It's a good point. Yeah, and the flights, like you said, the flights are cheap. I mean, you can get a flight to, from LA to China for $600.
I was going to say. Right. Yeah. So what's the difference? And living in Shanghai is so dynamic. And if you don't speak a foreign language, you're missing something in life. I'm just telling you. You're missing nuance and subtlety that like is so amazing. I say this to people in Asia. If you speak English, the world gets smaller, much smaller, because it means you can go anywhere and say anything to anybody. And, you know, 70% of the time, somebody around you is going to understand. But imagine if you could go to China and speak Mandarin. It
would be incredible.
Well, just how different would your experience be? And that's the other thing I try to teach people, like go on that internship when you're 20 years old, go to a place where you don't speak the language, don't understand the culture, come through the other side and go, oh my, you know what? Now if I just learn some Thai, like I'll see things through a completely different prism, and that's super powerful.
No, that's well put. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, unfortunately, Mandarin is so hard to learn.
It's not that hard. Anyway, look, I'm going to let you go. This has been awesome for me. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know you can be really busy.
Michael, call anytime. Good luck. If you want to talk journalism, I know you're more of a more business minded, but, there's lots of journalistic things that are interesting in Asia, especially Southeast Asia, where you're
definitely based. There's plenty to talk about.